Okay, great. So it's now 2 o'clock by the clock, so let's call the meeting to order. So I call the Story County Board of Health to order today on this October 2nd. First, we need to approve the agenda, and so I need the motion to approve the current agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, agenda is approved. And now the approval of the minutes. We have the minutes in front of us, and we've had a chance to review them ahead of time, all except me, which we looked at them real quickly here. Is there a way you can just email those to us?
Sure.
Thank you very much. I would appreciate it. Any corrections to the minutes? When I looked at them, they looked fine to me. Any corrections? Okay. I'd like to make a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, and this is a public forum. This is a time for members of the public to offer comments concerning matters and not scheduled to be heard before the Board of Health. Is there anyone that wishes to talk about something that is not scheduled to be talked about? You do?
Oh. Am I on?
Yeah.
Yes, you are. Yes.
Okay.
All right, so I'm Heather Bombi with the Iowa Department of Public Health and the Regional Community Health Consultants, and I gave each of you a little packet, just kind of a summary as to how the local public health services contract funding was expended in FY18. Initially, Story County received a little over $212,000, and then because of state budget cuts, that was reduced to $206,000. And then below that, you'll see the breakdown of the percentage of how the funds were spent within the county. So just kind of a summary of that. And then the documents behind this one, break it down if you want to compare to the other counties within our region, and then also some statewide data for how those funds are spent. So just kind of some updates on that. And then for FY19, Story County's allocation is $202,000. And then, again, there's a 3% hold within that contract, just in case there's additional state budget cuts. And then just a reminder, tomorrow is the Healthiest States Walk. And I looked, and there's 21 organized walks scheduled in Story County, so that's pretty cool. So hopefully, I think there's one here at 11:30.
Yep.
Perfect. Thank you. And then just some reminders, and then after I put this on here, I saw Margaret had it on the agenda, but for term expirations for Board of Health members, just reminders that Kristen and Mark and Marty, their terms are all expiring. At least that's what's on the...
When do they expire?
December 31st.
So we have to have elections or something?
I guess that's what's on the website, so if that hasn't been updated, but...
Maybe.
So just a reminder that the supervisors will need to reappoint the ones that want to serve again.
Okay. So I think what we'll do is we'll end up if maybe we can discuss that at the end of the meeting. Okay. For other board things. Okay. All right.
That's all that I have. Do you have any questions for me?
No. Thank you very much.
Heather,
thank you very much. That's nice information. Can I ask why it wasn't included in with our Department of Health the thing that they give us?
This is something that we do internally at the department. We gather all 99 counties' data and then put it together in a spreadsheet. So that's kind of why the spreadsheet that you have on the legal sheet is long and... kind of small print because we take it off of that Excel worksheet. So we just break it down into regions. Our local agencies don't have the information. They can have it if they want, but we just gathered it together within our bureau.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Is there anyone else who has anything to talk about from the public forum standpoint? Nope. Not seeing any, and we'll move on. Okay.
All right.
Progress update on Crestview Mobile Home Park.
Okay. Three words. 12 trailers left. Okay.
That's it?
Mm-hmm.
Good enough. Just for my own information, have we heard anything about selling or anything?
No. We haven't heard anything either way.
All right. Okay. Do you have any other questions about that?
What's the status on the Hoop building?
That's a planning and development issue, and apparently...
November 30th, Debbie.
Yeah, and it's apparently, I think maybe Marty and or Jerry, the planning person, saw inside there when they were there for some other thing and saw that it really wasn't being used for dismantling trailers, so it's definitely going to have to go at that date. Yeah, they don't, they will not qualify for renewal the way I understand it.
Great. Okay, so you're still up, Margaret.
I am.
Your next discussion for filing the January 1st, 2008 Board of Health vacancy.
Yep. Okay. So
we're up. You two are up December 31st. Okay.
And I believe, Mark, you've already expressed interest in continuing.
I've turned mine in.
Yes, and so Chris.
I'm interested, but I can't.
You can't.
Right? Yes.
Yeah.
You can't?
Because I moved.
So she can't?
That's what the Board of Supervisors decided, and they are the ones responsible for reporting.
Oh, gosh.
She's Boone County, so.
Boone is like Story.
I do.
I don't know.
Remember, this is all public, okay?
Yeah, we tried hard. There's a lot of conversation back and forth, and I thought that, I think Rick, thought it wasn't a good precedent to set to have a non-county resident person being on the board. That was the only reason. We tried to bend the rules, saying that she works in the county a lot and has history on the board.
Right.
And please try again if you think it would help.
I'm sorry. I mean, I really like what you've been doing on the emergency planning and stuff. That's a shame. So have you given any thought to someone you may wish to?
I do have someone in mind. I haven't asked that person directly yet, but I sure can.
Okay, and the application is on the website.
Okay.
Or we could mail one to them if that would be more helpful. Just let us know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Somebody like your clone would be ideal, you know.
Yes, somewhere. She's my office mate.
Oh, okay.
it was nice serving
you.
Thank you. We'll have one more meeting.
Yes.
Yep.
I'll be
here
in
December. Okay. All right. So, discussion and consideration for changing Story County Ordinance, Chapter 65, and to change contractor licensure to certification and limiting the revocation period to 60 days.
Yes.
So tell me about that.
Okay. So several meetings ago, I tried to throw a bunch of stuff on your table to look at, and it was just overwhelming for everybody, including myself. So we decided to break it down into little manageable pieces. So far, with that initial republication of the ordinance, we did do the quarantine and isolation, and we removed the lead-based paint hazards because we no longer do that program. We no longer get that money. So those two are already addressed. And then the private well permits and private wells, I decided not to go that route, so those are off the table too. So now what we're left with are the changes in the private sewage disposal system ordinance and then the public health nuisances. So today there's going to be two items from the private sewage disposal systems and then probably a couple more coming up in the next couple meetings. But these next two are quite manageable. So when we switched over to the coyote certification, the licensure language did not make sense. So simply just changing license to certification just to match the language of what is required now. And I also took out on that first line denial, because I don't think it's the board's place to deny a license or a certification straight up. That is the job of the IOWWA board. Okay, they can always get a certification, but and then we can always take that right away. And then I also changed it, and Kathy pointed this out, with other, like the pumping license, if you goof up big time, you lose it for 60 days, not 1 year, because 1 year would pretty much take somebody out of business, and that is not our intention. So so this basically is to take out the word and denial, to change license to certification, and to change from 1 year down to 60 days.
Do you need a motion to approve those changes?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So do we have any questions for Margaret about those?
I don't know.
Okay. All right. I need a motion to approve those changes.
So moved.
Okay. Second. Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah. The next one is... I'm sorry.
Do we need to say that we've spoken to the Board of Supervisors for that?
Oh, I guess.
They're recommending to send it to the Board of Supervisors.
Well, we're going to do it all in one big block, so maybe we'll wait till they're all done. And then run up the flagpole.
Just said that way, you know,
okay.
You guys are approving the ordinance change immediately.
Right. That makes sense. Okay. That,
okay.
I understand that. And then, but I would like to, I don't want to, I think it would be better if we approve these things in little bits like Margaret is doing to us.
Okay.
And then you can send to the Board of Supervisors.
As one big block.
As one block.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, so the next one is a question of when you need to submit an application for a septic permit. And before it was just new construction with wastewater generation, an existing system with increased wastewater loading. Oftentimes, like if a business moves in and takes over, that's increased water. Or a replacement or enlargement of a secondary system also requires an application. And what we're doing is adding, if you're coming in with an existing building, adding a bedroom, you have to apply for a septic permit or at least have us review what you have to see if it matches, your water use matches your treatment ability. Septic systems are sized on soils and number of bedrooms, unless it's a non-residential unit.
So if you're out in the country and you decide to have some construction and part of that construction is putting a new bedroom on your house,
mm-hmm.
then you have to have your septic system looked at.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So we look at the
site. That's not that way now, though, right?
Policy, Mark. So when planning and development gets an application in for zoning and they're adding onto their house, we look at the plans and see if there's a bedroom added. They also on their form have any bedrooms added or total number. And at that point, we tell them we need to look at their system and compare either just what's on paper to what they plan to have. And if that's not available, then have like a time of transfer inspection to prove that their system is big enough to handle that of an added bedroom. That is policy. And we've been doing it for a long time. So now we just want to have it on the books just for enforcement purposes.
Okay. All right. Okay. So
that's all I have. Right. So the black is all that's being added. I can't see that, sorry.
So do we have any questions for Margaret about that? Any further? Okay. I again need a motion to approve. So moved. Second?
Second.
Okay. All those in, any other further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, that one's moved. And then discussion and consideration of performance measure for the local public health service contract.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Teresa Ferrari, Surrey County Public Health. So the first thing is this performance measure. You wrote about the flu season last year where we had the meetings, we had weekly meetings, and communicated with the public about flu and how to prevent it. And then we put signs in the hospital about, you know, that don't, and then certain visitation restrictions on visitors in the hospital to try to prevent the spread of the flu because I had shared a sheet of the statistics last year. It was the worst in like 40 years or something. So we're already had meetings with Chris Perrin in the hospital and trying to get ahead of the game before any steps to take before we see any and having a proactive plan, I guess you'd say, instead of a reactive plan to the flu season this year. So hopefully that'll work. And then immunization, I did the benchmark on that. And so you guys all have a copy of that too, right? The immunization sheets of the percentage.
This.
Yeah.
This?
So. No,
that's just an information.
Immunization benchmark at the top.
I have that one.
I didn't see that.
That was attached to the agenda.
Oh.
Ahead of
time.
Oh. I don't have it.
Oh.
Yeah, not a printed copy.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I attempted to get you guys.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You had it ahead of time to view it when the agenda was posted Friday.
Okay.
Okay. So anyway, so the 24 months we had for Story County, 81% met the benchmark for it would be the DTaP, hepatitis B, MMR, Hib, polio, varicella, and then the pneumococcal shot, pneumovax shot. And then the adolescent, we had 66%, and then HPV for the first shot, 13%, which seems really low, but then the second shot, we had 46%. So when I was talking to Iris about that, they said that you actually add those together, so that would be 59% or either started or completed the series. And their benchmark goal for 2020 is 90%. So we're, you know, the 24 months isn't too far off from that, 81%. But I was talking to Les about how we could maybe up those numbers. And we do have a student coming this January, and we think maybe we'll have her try to, there's like reminder cards that you can send out to people to remind them of immunizations that they could come in and get immunizations. I don't know do you guys do anything like that at the clinic for pediatrics?
Yeah, we are starting to work on putting out email alerts, especially on the MyChart. But I will tell you, with the new law that came in play that all teenagers going into their senior year require a tetanus pertussis, or no, require their second meningitis vaccine,
right,
that we're having more people come in because of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing, they also have this law that when they go into seventh grade, they have to have a tetanus pertussis and a meningitis.
Uh-huh.
And before they start, we have a lot of people coming in. They don't see us for 3 to 4 years, and then they come in, and it gives us the opportunity to do a well visit and talk about general health issues and make sure they're healthy and doing all that. I cannot speak more highly to the aspect of required vaccinations. And you want to get your HPV rate up? Require it.
Yeah.
Once it's required, it'll go up.
Yeah.
And
that's true.
The best example is the state of Mississippi. Not great on a lot of healthcare issues, but they do not allow any type of way that you can get into school and not be immunized in Mississippi if you have a physician say that they can't get these vaccines.
Mm-hmm. So they don't
even
allow
the highest rate. They have the highest rates of immunizations in the country.
That's great.
Because of it. So as we go to the legislature, make no question at all. And what we use these laws for is we get these people in, we get these families in, we get these kids in, and allows us to talk about health care issues, safe sex, drug issues, and get their vaccines.
Yeah, that's
so,
a good idea. So until we get that.
Right.
Well, and then I'm hearing more and more about the meningitis B shot. Do you give that a lot? And
we do. We're actually struggling a little bit. There's controversies about it's effective, but the effect effectiveness wanes over time, so timing is a big issue. Insurances are paying for it, and we've just, our policy is now to give it a 17 years of age and have them come back in a couple months for a second. We think that's the best compromise. Meningococcemia B covers another strain besides the Menactra.
Yeah.
So we're trying to get, we're trying to kind of, and I think other practices are struggling with timing with that also.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what we thought would be best to do.
Can you tell me on that? I see there's 180 pediatric deaths. Which strain of flu do you know that they, those have gotten?
What's they would have had, what strain of flu shot?
No, what strain of flu did they have from the deaths? Was it the H3N2 or?
I will tell you that virtually all those children that died were not immunized.
Yeah, yeah. And these are, and I didn't put this on after I printed it, this is CDC report.
Right, that's what the CDC says. That that for pediatric deaths, which they watch closely, virtually all the 180 did not get a vaccine.
Really?
So what does the flu shot we're getting now, is that going to cover the H3N2 or not?
Yeah, it's basically the same flu shot as was last year.
Well, the flu shot last year didn't cover that strain. So
it's basically the same. There's not a lot of difference.
There's not any difference.
It depends on what's being seen. You know, what strain is out there.
Yeah. Right.
And even if the vaccine is not a correct match, there is still felt. We've always had this impression, and there's data that's coming out now that says it is still protective against serious disease.
It still helps.
So it still does help. And we've always kind of felt this way, but we're getting some data that says, yes, that impression, our impression is correct on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you still may, it's usually a lighter version that you get, right? If you get this flu, you don't die from it.
And it's just very interesting that so many of those children who died were not vaccinated for whatever reason.
Isn't there there's an adult strain shot now for our seniors or adults?
Right, with a higher immunogenicity.
Does that help?
I don't know. I don't know the data.
And you know what? My rep came with before this, just probably a month ago, and was saying that they're working on, you know how the high dose is trivalent, only three? Mm-hmm. They're working on a quadrivalent.
Oh, good.
Which they said should be out in January.
I think the oral's back too, right?
The flu mist. But we're not using that one at all. And VFC didn't send it to us. But
we made a decision within our department to have some available, but we were a little put off by the fact that it had been pretty ineffective for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
And safe, but not effective. So we know the shot works. So mm-hmm. we're going to wait until we get another year or two of data.
Make
a good recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're doing. So.
Yeah, and they, like I said, the VFC didn't even send us any.
Yeah,
we didn't.
Right.
We're not using it either on anybody. But
you know when VFC is going to start shipping its older kids flu vaccines?
Well, the flu shot stuff we have is 6 months and older.
Right.
It's all.
We have VFC for 6 months and up to 3 years.
Yeah, we don't have that. Ours is 6 months, all the way up to adult. It's Fluval, I believe. Yeah, because I remember last year we got that, and Sherry was like, she was confused by that because they hadn't had that before. But ours is not, we don't have separate. We don't have 6 months to 3 years and 6 months. We have, it's all 6 months and up is what ours says on it.
Can I ask you to do me a favor?
Mm-hmm.
I would really appreciate it if you give a call to my nurse manager, Mandy Allen.
Okay. What's her name?
Mandy Allen.
Mandy Allen.
And just talk with her about what you guys have and why it's different, because I thought the dosages were different.
Yeah.
The dosages of drug are different.
They're all half mil. It says it right on the thing, and it says 6 months and up. 6 months to, it doesn't have an age.
Could you
call
her, make sure that that's.
Mandy Allen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, because it simplifies things.
Yeah, it does, but we're doing something differently.
Okay.
So we have to know.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll do that. Anything else?
No, that's all
right.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Tell her I asked you to call.
Okay.
All right. Okay, so you also you did the immunization thing. Okay, agency and departmental reports. Surrey County Public Health. Again? Or did you finish your report? That's it? Nothing else to say? Okay, sounds good.
Do you guys have any...
Do you have any questions over it?
Don't.
You don't?
Okay. Thank you. Okay, so, Surrey County Environmental Health. Margaret, you're up. Well, you're 8, so you're next.
Let's see. Oh. So, good afternoon. Thanks for meeting again today. Glad we had a quorum. Okay, so I'll start off with wells. So this is from January 1st, 9 wells, 6 water wells, and we've done 17 pluggings, 1 cistern, 1 rehab, 160 water samples, that's really a lot, and then 28 time of transfer inspections. Some of my realtor friends have said that it's pretty slow this year for some odd reason. The conditions are right. Economically, but they're really slow, slower than usual. So hard to say what that means. So the State Hygienic Lab has reached out to us again regarding a continuation of studies, the Iowa Well Survey, and so we offer to collect samples for them. So some of this is covered by our Grants to Counties program, and then others, the other things are covered by the State Hygienic Lab. They also get a grant. So we'll be testing, this is for 25 samples, minimum 25 samples, bacteria, nitrate, and nitrite, arsenic, and then the state will cover manganese, safeners, which is like the covering on seeds, and then, I'm not going to say that word, herbicides.
And you don't routinely test for fluoride?
We do not. I used to offer it when moms were concerned about their kids. So many people are on rural water now. Very few are on their own well. And I guess, you know, Kathy does most of the sampling now. Probably if houses with kids are on well water, we could probably throw that in and just cover the cost.
That's I usually suggest that young children, right?
Okay. And then in addition to that, the State Hygienic Lab is doing a little mini course, a 4-H mini course, focused on arsenic in well water. So I guess the kids will be taking kids home, collecting samples, and it's kind of like an educational thing, but then also sending our contact information out so we can do well inspections and do this other gamut of testing. But then I'm also going to use that as maybe a foot in the door to have them do some of our other programs like septic maintenance, education, things like that. You know, reaching the rural folks, not always easy to do, but this is a good way to do it, I think. Let's see, so septics for calendar year 2018. 39 inspections, 72 permits. And as you can see, we're a little behind. Let's see, this kind of thing. Yeah, so yeah, 92 in 2017. So it's quite behind compared to last year. But it is what it is. We're plenty busy. It doesn't feel like we're doing less. So, and then special projects, Squaw Valley South, USDA Rural Development. So Squaw Valley South decided to go with their package plant, not individual treatment on-site treatment systems, and so the USDA Rural Development contacted me, and I had to fill out a questionnaire about how we felt about this and impacts on the environment and things like that. So, and they were satisfied with that report. I've been working on a C2C document, review and revisions. That's capstone to cornerstone countywide thing. And then, so I answered the environmental health parts of it. We did get our flu shots that the county paid for, so that was great, plus our insurance. We reviewed the work session for plan development regulation review. Boy, the H-Null, the Ridout industrial park that's south of the Cornerstone Church over that way. So it's south of 30 there. I'm handing that over to DNR because it's industrial and it's just we can't get the tank right. So we'll hand it over to DNR and see if their engineers can come up with something.
What are they doing now over there?
Well, it's the, what is it called, the steamway, or the people that clean the rugs and the fire restoration, things like that. And all of their stuff, we came up with this idea that they leave most of that product behind so that it goes to the wastewater treatment plant. So dump it in the tub or the whatever. And then whatever they had to bring back, put it in a holding tank and bring it over to the treatment plant in batches. And that went on for a few months. I don't know if they did it or didn't do it. But their tank still is dead. So, nothing's happening. It's a sand filter discharges. So I'm at a loss, so it's time to hand it over to the engineers and see if they can come up with something. I did work with the field office, the DNR field office on it, but, So let's see. Flatabow inspection with planning development. This is like a little mini, I've got pictures of this. I'll talk about that later on then. Cameron Estates, Lot 6 troubleshooting, Nevada well. So on the Nevada well, whatever, there's a lust site. The way they try to make the last little problem go away is to deny people's rights that are in a circumference around that lust site, and that's a leaking underground storage tank. So around that to not be able to get a well permit. And so they asked, and this time it was DNR asking the county to deny any permits within a certain area. And I said, no, I won't do that. I'll acknowledge that that is there and that is a problem, but I don't think it's fair that property owners around somebody that caused the problem should have to pay for that. So it's very, the chances of a water well being needed in a city is pretty small. But still, it's the property owner's rights, and it shouldn't be taken away just because it was a gas plant before.
What's wrong with Cameron Estates, Lot 6? What was that?
I'll go through that. I've got some pictures. I'll talk about that a little bit more. Irons Review, Goldie Troubleshoot, and Fernald. I don't have pictures of Fernald, so I'll talk about that now so I don't forget. Fernald, so we had the house of Mr. Prather. He did get the asbestos tested and turned that over to the fire chief, and then they are setting a date for a practice burn. So, and then his neighbor, hopefully he will, he scooped it together a little better. Hopefully he'll get that out and it'll be gone. I haven't done a thing on the group down further west on the road that had the people living there. I haven't done anything on that. Just it's a busy time of the year. Let's see, and that's all. Okay. So Sanford Flatabow is just outside of Story City, and they are on county land. And the top right is the aerial of his operation. And for the longest time, I guess he was called. He was called to come out to accident sites and tow the cars off. And lots of times people don't show up to claim their cars because it's more expensive to claim it than to just leave it. So hence, right there. And so he's got burn piles, tire piles, battery piles, piles. So I turned them over to DNR. DNR is getting sick of me, but I turned them over to DNR because it really is like a salvage yard that needs attention.
Is it Mark?
Thank you, Darla. You not only have a call, you have a phone. A phone and a call.
So as you can see, this is quite the problem. And this started up as a result of a complaint that came into planning and development. And so the two of us went out together and inspected it. It's one of those tough sites where the, you know, the guy loves his spot there. And cleaning that up, so I thought, well, let's see what DNR can come up with and programs and that.
It looks like a mess.
Cameron Estates, Lot 6, troubleshooting. Okay, so this one, and I'm only bringing this up because it was very time-consuming, and I'm a little worried that we're going to have more situations like that up here, up there. But this year, with all the rain, it has really, really tested all of the systems, new or old. We're having a lot of issues with, you know, surfacing and things like that. This particular one, the alarm light keeps going on and letting them know that, you know, the tank is filling up. At one point in time, it did back up more for the beginning. So they put in collection lines, surface water collection lines, and then they're probably going to have to add a curtain drain. But they did have general complaints about all of the water in that area. You know, a lot, this gal is pretty well connected. The woman that owns this property is pretty well connected with the neighbors. And they were concerned with the water and having septic systems competing with all that water. Now, they did go ahead and put in a new pond that they could hopefully add more drainage lines and bring it to the pond, and then that'll slowly discharge to the creek over by you. Mark is very interested in this because he lives on the other side of these trees, basically, right, Mark?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention that there have been issues on septic systems in Cameron Estates.
Now, that's not a mound, though, was it?
It was a pressurized system, so it's almost like an at grade.
At grade, as
yeah.
I recall.
Yep. I guess maybe I did have a picture of this well here, chapter 6. So that's the location of the leaking underground storage tank. It is currently two warehouses for personal storage, private storage. They are not the ones that created the pollution. It was the previous owners that did. So I was just surprised, too, that DNR is now asking the county to not permit. That they don't have the right to do that because we have the permitting rights that they cannot tell us not to do that at this point. Greenleaf troubleshooting. So the picture on the left shows the 2012 break, and then this is a mound, Mark. On the right is the most recent. It's not as obvious, but it's still there. And so we've been working on coming up with a solution, and it's probably going to be replacing the whole system. And then there's been a lot to do about who's going to pay for it. The realtor asked if Story County was interested in chipping in, and I told him that was unprecedented. You know, it just has never happened before, and as long as we can show that we did our best to come up with things, we shouldn't be liable for this. This was a system that was designed by my predecessor. And, you know, we don't know if it was the installation, the design, the soil conditions, you know, there's a lot of things. Or for a while there, too, the basement water was tied into the septic system, so that flooded the system, too. So a lot of problems with it, but it has turned into kind of this back and forth thing going on. Okay, so we sat. Stephanie's been working with planning and development, going through a lot of software that manages permits and things like that. And it would be nice if the both of us were on the same type of software. Right now we have the system that Matt wrote, and it works great. But we don't have a backup to it as far as someone else knowing how to do it. And it it isn't the same as planning and development. Now, we did, Matt offered to write a program for planning and development, but they haven't accepted that yet. So what they've been doing is sitting through webinars with representatives, and they describe their product, and then they're going to have to decide what software works best for their system. And we may or may not want to tag along with them so that we have the same system. They're really expensive, and there's no guarantee that they're a great product. You know, you don't know until you get it. So we're going to pretty much let them do all the heavy lifting, sit through all those webinars, and if you come up with one, then we would consider at that time, you know, because we're happy as clams with what we have. So, conceptual reviews for doggy daycare on Highway 210, LPD Ag Subdivision, and Manette. Nothing big on that. Training in the meetings, EOC training for a couple of us. Kathy sat in on the lid in the water, hoop cog, and Aranka webinars. And that's all I have. So what's coming up next is, next meeting we're going to have to go over the budget. It'll be due the Friday after our December meeting. So we'll have to go through those numbers and talk about it a little bit. It's usually not overly complicated or anything. It usually stays pretty much the same. I meant to include that one slide, and I didn't. Chris, why are you here?
This public meeting is one of the comments.
Okay, I didn't know if you were here for... I did mean to give an overview of the irons, because the city's interested in that as well. So I will just talk about that for a few minutes, if that's all right.
Sure.
Okay. So the irons is that subdivision up near the country club, the Ames Golf and Country Club. Okay. And so the city was very interested in it and took the lead on it for the most part, because they will eventually annex them on down the road. So for now, we are doing on-site septic systems, and then we're doing Advantexes that hopefully discharge or... Advantexes and the sewer lines will hopefully hook up to the sewer line pretty easily if the city ever were to come through. So right now there's no infrastructure for the city, for the city sewer, so that would have to be added. And then the Advantexes would have to be disconnected, and then each house would have to be hooked onto the city sewer. So all of them are having Advantex systems put in. And they were all designed by the engineer to not discharge, but so far we have four that do discharge, and we are having them go through UV disinfection and then getting an NPDES permit, which would require annual testing. The other thing is two duplexes, so four units, they... go out the back, and the city would like to see them going out the front, so it's just easier for hookup. So for future reference, those have to go toward the front of the house more.
Correct. There's actually a design from our engineers that allows for the sewer line to go through the back and connect to those just two units.
Okay. So that's been thought of. Okay. I think that's all I have to say about that for now.
How do you plan on hooking up all the rest of those with the septic tanks all going out the back? Are you going to have...
They don't go out the back. So, actually, there's only two that go out the back. There's a line that would connect to. The rest, we exit out the basements on the side yards. So the thought was very much that we would be able to run a service line from the main sewer right to the side of the house. That way you don't have to tear up front yards or backyards, and then we can just come out the side. So that's what we've done every time, out the side of the house, and then that way we can just come straight to the road for the new sewer line. And then
are you going to tear up the street to put in the...
It'd be in the right of way, the side of the street.
So the ones on the other side of the road, you're going to have to bore across,
yeah.
Has the city indicated any time frame for that now that the Friedrich?
Yeah, so don't know how much you, the Frieger property is straight west of George Rush and Carver. They did a big sewer analysis and sewer study that determined there's a name for it, I forget the name, but the sewer line, they decided, and after much research and money spent and engineering analysis, that the Frieger property can be serviced to the south of coming up through kind of west of Scenic Valley development. But they said it's just enough capacity to only handle the Frieger property. So nothing east of GW Carver, nothing north of Cameron School Road. So that's the last, because there was clearly enough capacity to do the Frieger property. That was the line of the sand, was Cameron School and GW.
Okay.
So the Fort Minor Farm and the Irons would all have to be served to the east to higher Cameron.
Coming off that other subdivision to the south.
Come through Rose Prairie, come through Fort Myer Farm. So it's still the property, the Irons subdivision is also ranging on Fort Myer Farm.
Okay.
So
okay.
At the end of the day, nothing's changed. Still comes back to the Fort Myer Farm that Irons to be serviced.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
So it could be a while before that happens.
Yeah.
The Fort Myer Farm, yeah. That might be a while before that gets developed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's an older gentleman, but he's also made it clear that he, from what I understand, I haven't talked to him personally, but this through the city, that he is not interested in selling or anything until he passes away and gives it to his kids. This was inheritance tax, capital gains tax, or anything else. So.
Okay. So and and I apologize for asking what you're doing here, but you're always welcome to public meetings. I was just, like, surprised. We don't usually get developers.
You usually don't get the public.
So welcome.
We have done private septics in the last 10 years.
Absolutely, you have. Yeah, so you certainly belong here. You belong here big time, yeah. So thank you for coming. Okay, any questions?
Okay. Very good. All right. Okay. Denise Etten.
Good afternoon. Sent you a couple things, but I've given you a couple more. When I was here in August, things were pretty quiet, but then, you know, two words, school started. So, since that time, you have the August report of everything that happened in August. We're always a couple months behind because that doesn't get done until the end of August. September's isn't done. But that gives you an idea. But to give you a little bit more of an idea, in Nevada, we've already started and finished all the sixth graders for Too Good for Drugs. We started 15 sections of Project Alert at the Ames Middle School. We finished Ballard, one section. Last week I saw all the eighth grade health kids, and tomorrow I start all the Ames health kids. And we normally see them several times during the semester. So we sort of hit the ground running. We also talked to a lot of college classes. I did 10 classes of the 110 class, which is our beginning health class, in about 7 days. That's five sections, two times each. And that usually is focused on how do you not binge drink? And then one day is really devoted just to marijuana. So we give them a lot of information, including the handout that I think I gave you the time before. We also all attended during that same time an opioids training that was sponsored by Prosper, which is under the Iowa Prevention Institute, which is now under the umbrella of Iowa State University. And they brought in people from all over the state. That was very useful, very compelling, too. They had people who spoke about their own opioid use. One was a school teacher from Jefferson who got started because it was prescribed to her, and she just kept taking it because it was prescribed to her, and pretty quickly it took over her life. And then somebody else who lost a child to that, so which is always heartbreaking. But it, you know, just a whole gambit of things at that day-long training. And then last Thursday was the Youth in Recovery Conference that is put on by the Iowa Department of Public Health, and that is an annual thing that is subsidized by SAMHSA. And again, all over the board, Doug Gentile, who is a researcher, a psychologist at Iowa State, who does a lot of research on addiction and gaming, on video games, and advertising, and how the brain is influenced by that, was one of the keynote speakers. And so that was not, I don't think, as well attended as it was last year, but there were probably 100 people at that, and that was at Sheman. So that's some of the continuing education that we get. Besides the schools, we continue to work in the community, so we staff the Prevention Policy Board, and just giving an update of some of the things that they've been doing. In August, they submitted a letter to 161 different alcohol vendors, mostly in Ames, that was also signed by the sheriff, chief of police, chief of Iowa State Police, health promotion club, reminding people to ID that school was starting and that specifically the homecoming was coming up. So could we just make an extra effort to be sure and ID those kids who might possibly not remember when their birthday is and get a little carried away. So we also work with the Opioid Task Force, and you have in front of you the results, which they haven't even seen yet, but we did sponsor that first community conversation, first of three seminars, at Mary Greeley on the 13th. There were about 65 people, evidently only about 21 people decided that they would submit a, we had sort of a pre-post survey and then they could make comments, but that's a listing of that, and this is a preview because we don't have a meeting until next week, so you get the heads up on that. But it was well received, I think, by the people who were there. There'll be another one on November 8th, and at that point we'll have some folks who, again, have lives who have been impacted by that. So we have a mother and son, and someone else who has lost a child. The third one will be in January, and that's when, and I think I've told you this before, we're going to bring in folks who can talk about treatment. If you want help, how do you actually do that? And at the last meeting, we talked about being able to bring in vendors from around Central Iowa, not just Ames, not just Story County, but from all over the place to be there to meet with people. So that will be, I think, more a shorter program, but more of an opportunity for people to meet and greet those kinds of folks, to ask some questions up front. So that was part of September. We also staff the juvenile justice lunch that is every month. I don't know if I've ever mentioned that before. And I've started going to the meetings with Nevada. Now has its very own substance abuse task force. They meet the fourth Monday of the month at 7 a.m. It's a lot of fun, except for that part, at the library here in Nevada. And I'm impressed with that in that they have a lot of people at the table who can make decisions. The police chief is there every time, and members of the city council and other, service providers. And one small thing that they're looking at doing is, we hand out that 3x5 card to tell people where to take their expired substances. We're going to redo that to be very specific to Nevada, include the new CARES, and instead on the back, explaining why you should take them back. I think they'll have some other information about services in Nevada. So they're looking to revamp that. But in case you want an old version, I left some on the counter downstairs, just in case. But we continue to give those out to businesses. I just took some to Walmart the other day and said, would you like some of these? And ladies went, give those to me. Give those right now, because they hand them out all the time. So that's gratifying to know that. We continue to work with the Health Promotion Club, and besides that letter, they're going to work with Prevention Policy Board this year to try and take the vaping law to the next level, take it to the next level to make it a law. And I think Herman has indicated that he's more ready to do that now, so we hope to get some support for that. I spoke with middle school teacher the other day who may use that as extra credit if kids want to write their legislators to encourage middle school kids to get involved with that too. So we have a good group with the Mayor's Youth Committee, so I think that they'll be involved with that as well. What's the other thing I was going to tell you? And then we work with a lot of sororities and fraternities, doing talks for them. I just got an email the other night from, hi, Denise, I'm one of your former students, and I live in a fraternity, and we need somebody to come and talk about, high-risk drinking, and, what we really need is somebody to come in and yell at 95 guys who don't make particularly good choices, and we thought you'd be our girl. I could not be more flattered. So I said I would love to come and yell at your guys. That's what I was born to do. So we're going to do that on the 14th, and then on the 15th, I act as the advisor to the Theta Chi House. And I don't know if I've ever explained this before, but they're part of a national initiative called the Sacred Purpose. Ever mentioned this before? And about 6-ish years ago, I think, they had a death on either, not at our house, but either side of the coast. One was a suicide, one was an overdose. And the guys who were Health National office were coming home from that funeral and literally pulled over to the side of the road, a car full of them, and just said, we can't do this anymore. We can never let this happen again. And took about 2 years to create this initiative that everybody has to buy into if they're going to be a Theta Chi, called the Sacred Purpose. And so to that end, they have to have a designated vice president. It has to be an officer position who will work on that. They have to have a specific advisor just for that initiative. So that's how I got involved. They have to do 7 in-house programs every year about anything health and wellness, but they have to specifically address drinking and they have to specifically address mental health issues. And then they have to do 2 campus-wide activities as well. So we've done that for the and so we've been involved with that. I'm going into year 5 in January. One of the things that they've done as a campus-wide is they've done, and they can sort of choose what their issue is on that, but they've done a candlelight vigil, so this will be number 5 coming up this winter, to bring attention to survivors of sexual abuse, of sexual assault. So last year we did it under the campanile, and we had about 100 kids there. That was our biggest. So we went from about 15 to 30. It's doubled almost every year. So that's been nice. But the best part, not the best part, but you can apply for a national award on that, and we've taken it home 2 out of the 4 times. So they came home from the national convention in August with a really nice trophy. But, you know, that's not the best part. The best part is I think my guys are taking it somewhat seriously. We talk about it all the time. I'm over there a lot. And we just talk about it all the time. So we need to make sure that they're healthy. And back to the Health Promotion Club, we try and do similar things. They meet twice a month. The first meeting of the month is supposed to be something sort of fun. So first meeting of the month in September, we had Root Beer Sundays, which were really good. It's just sort of a social. And then Sherry Zook from Public Health came and talked to them. We have our October meeting tonight. Our fun thing sort of fell through, so we're going to be sort of serious. And on the 16th, we will have an esteemed member of the medical community come and talk. So you're the fun thing in 2 weeks. Do you
That's
remember
the
that
16th?
Part? Yes, that is. You're now the fun thing.
What?
You're going to be more fun than what I'm going to make them do tonight. No question. I'm going to make them do tonight. So working, I really enjoy and think it is valuable to work with college students because they're very enthused about those kinds of careers, enthused about their lives, and so I think that's a good investment on our part. Mm-hmm. And we really have seen, other than, you know, the very tragic situation that we've had recently, I think we've had a pretty good year otherwise, but that was heartbreaking. Anyway, and to one other thing, I'd like to give you examples of some of the things that we're handing out, and we're giving out a lot of information about the opioids right now. This is Tips for Teens, but it has information that anybody can use. So that and the one I gave you on meth are some of the things that we're trying to spread around as well, because even though opioids are really in the news, meth is still a bigger drug of choice, and alcohol is still the one that is the most used and abused. So there's a little something for everyone. So many drugs, so little time, is what we like to say.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
The FDA, I recently heard they want to ban the e-cigarette things for
juveniles.
Certain age. Which age was that?
Well, they have given the e-cigarette manufacturers 60 days to get their act together to decide how they're not going to sell them to kids, how they're not going to be attractive to kids. I can't wait to see what they come up with.
So are you seeing like 16-year-olds?
Oh, yeah. We just had in schools that shall remain unnamed, but a school in Story County that had a big bust of kids smoking in the bathroom. And then in another county that should remain unnamed. And the comment was, well, they'll probably have to sit out some games because it's against their good conduct policy. And my comment was, and it's against the law.
So
you know, they're not allowed to have the paraphernalia at all.
What age is it? You have to be 18, right?
Yeah.
So they're getting these somehow, these younger kids.
They appear to, yes. Well, they're very easy to hide, and these jewels look like a flash drive. So it's pretty easy to just have it.
So someone's selling them to them. Then somebody
else. Somehow they're getting it, yes.
I'm online.
Outward selling or? Yeah, it's not tough. Where there's a will. So anyway, but yeah, they're supposed to have a plan on how they are not going to make it attractive to kids.
Well, hopefully they'll do something.
We'll see.
Oh, sorry.
Did you watch?
Yeah.
Okay, what questions do you have?
No. No, very good. You'll email me with
I the, will. With, I absolutely
thank you
will.
Very much. Okay, sounds good. Well, thank you very much. Okay, so I think, is there anything else that anyone needs to talk about out there? Okay, so I'd like to take comments from the staff. Any comments from the staff? Comments? Do you have any comments?
I do. I have one question. Yeah, I know we inspect for, you know, tattoo parlors and what, sunbathing place, tanning beds. And I'll maybe have it. I had someone ask me the other day, who inspects mortuaries?
Yeah, I used to do those. I used to find out.
Because they thought that we should be inspecting the mortuaries in our area, mm-hmm. and that they haven't been getting inspected.
Oh. I don't know. So I, off the top of my head, maybe okay. Department of Inspections and Appeals, yeah, but I don't, but I will find out and let you know.
That's an interesting question because that came up with, now I know in Boone, yeah, I know Boone is not, but in Nashville, the town of Boone, where they were going to build a mortuary in town and had a crematorium as part of it. And the neighbors kind of stopped it because of concerns about pollutants that apparently it spews out a fair amount. And I know there's some talk about that already because there's a mortuary in right on Lincoln Way, and they have a place where they dispose of the bodies. Right?
Well, supposedly the inspections used to be very strict and very, you know, critical on all their, you know, the prep areas and so forth. And it seems like maybe that's getting overlooked and they're not getting inspected anymore.
I'll look into it and I'll let you know.
Thank you.
Well, it's interesting. Okay. I had two quick things. One was just an update on the emergency response plan. We've had a heck of a time getting our schedules to align. So through a number of postponed meetings, we're getting together, Teresa and I, in a couple weeks to get back at it again. So, and then second comment, we had our annual meeting for the Iowa Veterinary Medical Association week before last. It's been already now. Was surprising to me, but we got in a discussion at our executive board meeting about how challenging the opioid situation is becoming for veterinarians because people are shopping through their pets for opioids. It's been a problem, but it is here and very alive and well in our area. I was surprised how many of my colleagues just sitting at the table, and there were probably 25 of us there. Several had already had issues where people are coming in with false identities or using the same pet and going to multiple clinics, shopping for tramadol mainly, but also fentanyl patches, which I hope to God no one would ever send home on an animal, but it does happen. And then also that they're getting caught by people that do relief work. There was one veterinarian that had the same person come in under a different name each time, but with the same dog, and then their first sister did the same thing. So they caught the person. But there's a real lax in, if you do suspect that someone is doing that, what do you even do as a veterinarian? I'm working with the Iowa Department of Public Health, and we're trying to get some, they've already put some really great resources together. Kevin Gabbert and Ann Garvey is my old boss, but she's the state public health vet specific to veterinarians. And the other issue that we're having is veterinarians, when they have tramadol and other drugs on their shelves that expire, is finding a place to have take-backs for that kind of stuff in a safe way. So that's an ongoing problem, but it is, I was surprised to hear how high the frequency of it was happening right here in Central Iowa.
So what interesting way of looking at it. I mean,
yeah.
Because those are the same problems that happened
Yep.
To
medical. And people are, they're even finding that people are actually harming their animals so that they appear to be in pain and can take them to a clinic to get pain medication. So it's an animal abuse issue. And yeah, like they'll break their own dog's legs so they can get pain. So just an FYI, I guess. I found that alarming.
And a little disgusting.
Yeah,
really.
Well, thank you.
That's all. That was not a cheery note.
Oh, great. Well, with that, I will take a motion to adjourn the meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, our meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.